From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, here's the news for This Day in Maine, Thursday, August 25th, 2016. I'm Andrew Catalina, in for Barbara Caridi. And on this day, Governor Paula Page is again fending off accusations of racism after remarks at a town hall meeting last night. Portland's mayor is proposing protections for renters in the city, known for its tight market, and a new law may change the way adult education is taught. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th. kvcc.me.edu.
Last January, Governor Paula Page created a firestorm of controversy when he talked about black drug dealers coming to Maine to sell their product and impregnate white girls. At another of his town meetings, this one last night in North Berwick, LePage claimed that more than 90% of drug dealers arrested since last January are black or Hispanic. As Mallory reports, the governor is once again defending himself against allegations that he's racist.
At Wednesday's event, New York businessman Andrew Ritchie, who says he used to live in Maine, asked LePage how he could convince a business to come here.
Given the kind of rhetoric you put out there around people of color, name, calling them drug dealers, etc., how could I bring a company here? Given the toxic environment that you create.
The governor responded by bringing up the controversy he generated last January at a town meeting in Bridgeton, where he said most drug dealers arrested in Maine are black and come from out of state, adding that many of them impregnate white girls while they're here. LePage says since then he's been keeping a file of information on drug arrests in Maine.
90%+ of those pictures in my book, and it's a three-ring binder, are black and Hispanic people.
LePage repeated his belief that the dealers are mostly from Connecticut and New York. He invited Ritchie to come to the State House and look at the binder. When Maine Public Radio asked to see the binder, we were told to file a formal request under the state's public records law. The administration's not responded to that request. There is no central repository of drug arrests in the state that keep track of ethnicity data of suspects. But in Lewiston, with a large minority population, Interim Police Chief Brian O'Malley says that over the past 3 years, there were 137 drug arrests of all types, involving mostly white people.
Out of our 137 drug arrests, 109 were white individuals, 27 were black individuals, and one was identified as an American Indian.
LePage told the 50 or so attending the North Berwick town meeting that he is not a racist and reminded him of the young black man from Jamaica he welcomed into his family and treated as a son.
The fact of the matter is, sir, I am not a racist, and I don't promote it.
Ritchie interjected that he had not called LePage a racist.
No, you're insinuating, and somebody in the back of the room was saying, making insinuations.
The governor went on to say that he does not condone nor tolerate racist acts.
If I see discrimination, if I see bullying, if I see domestic violence, I don't care if you're white, black, it doesn't make any difference. You'll hear me speak up.
But House Speaker Mark Eaves, a Democrat from North Berwick, who's been a fierce political adversary of LePage, issued a statement calling the governor's comments racially charged and divisive. The American Civil Liberties Union of Maine says if the governor's figures are correct and more than 90% of drug dealers' arrests involve blacks and Hispanics, then Maine police may be engaging in racial profiling. Allison B.A. is the group's executive director and says in a state that is overwhelmingly white, demographics would indicate most of the drug dealers should be white.
This kind of overwhelming disparity suggests some sort of racial profiling that's illegal and unconstitutional.
BA says the group would like to work with the governor and his administration to address that issue. And she says the governor's several comments with racial overtones over this past year raise another question that concerns her.
Why is the governor inserting race in this conversation at all? We are facing a significant addiction problem in the state of Maine. Under the governor's leadership, we should be looking for ways to come together to solve this crisis, not infusing racial hatred that divides us as a community.
The governor declined a request for an interview with Maine Public Radio to discuss his comments, but he did grant an audience with reporters that had confronted him on his way to lunch. According to the Portland Press-Herald account of the interview at the Blaine House, he stood by his comments, adding that regardless of the ethnicity of the dealers, his goal is to stop the drug trade that is killing Maine people. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Governor Paula Page told a conservative talk show host that the father of a Muslim American army captain killed in combat is a con artist for criticizing Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump. The governor's comments follow a national controversy involving Trump and Keyser Khan, whose son was awarded the Gold Star for dying while protecting his fellow soldiers in Iraq.
Then there's the mighty powerful one, like Mr. Khan, which is a con artist himself, and he uses the death of his son, who's an American soldier, which we respect and honor, and he uses that to go after Trump, which I found very distasteful.
LePage's comments to Howie Carr immediately followed the Boston radio host's attempt to compare an Iranian refugee who immigrated to Maine and later died fighting for ISIS to the Boston Marathon bombers. The governor's criticism of Khan was apparently spurred by debunked attempts by conservative activists to implicate Khan, an attorney, with an international law firm's dealings with the Clinton Foundation. Trump, who has the endorsement of both Carr and LePage, drew widespread condemnation for criticizing Khan. Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins has said Trump's actions toward Khan were one of the reasons she will not back his candidacy. With Portland's rental and real estate markets continuing to price out some longtime residents, Mayor Ethan Strimling is proposing an array of new restrictions on city landlords' ability to raise rent and evict tenants. Fred Bever reports.
Strimling says he wants to limit rent hikes to only once a year and bar them if a landlord owns any housing that doesn't meet code. He wants to limit the number of no-cause evictions a landlord can impose on tenants who lack a lease and require landlords to accept tenants who receive housing vouchers. Some landlords and the city's corporation council are skeptical about whether Strimling's proposals can legally be implemented, but Strimling says he's confident.
Last weekend, I was at the Italian Heritage Festival, and within 20 minutes of walking around, two people came up to me talking about how they were being forced out of their homes because their buildings were being sold. And every week in my office, I get calls from people with the same kinds of stories, and we can't ignore it. So if we have to push the envelope a little bit, then I'm going to push the envelope. But I do believe that what we're doing will meet the law and will survive any challenge.
The City Council's Housing Committee, which includes a majority of the council itself, could vote on the proposals at its next meeting in September. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
The National Transportation Safety Board announced Wednesday that its lab has retrieved 26 hours of information from the data recorder of the cargo ship El Faro. All 33 crew members died when the El Faro sunk off the coast of the Bahamas last October, including four crew members from Maine. Patty White reports.
When the data recorder was retrieved from the ocean floor August 8th, National Transportation Safety Board officials cautioned it was unclear how much information it would contain. But on Wednesday, the NTSB announced the recorder captures the ship's captain notifying personnel on shore of the El Faro's critical condition as it sailed during Hurricane Joaquin. It also contains audio of the captain sounding the alarm to abandon the ship the morning of October 1st. 10 minutes later, the recording ends. The captain was among four crew members from Maine, all graduates of Maine Maritime Academy. The NTSB says it's unknown how long it will take to develop a final transcript of the data recorder's audio. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell will be one of the first official visitors to Maine's Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, which was authorized by President Barack Obama this week. As Susan Charon reports, Secretary Jewell will also participate in a dedication ceremony for the new monument.
This week, Secretary Jewell has been visiting national parks around the country to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. On Sunday, she'll conclude that tour with a trip to Millinocket, Maine, to participate in a public celebration and dedication ceremony of the country's newest national monument, Katahdin Woods and Waters. The 87,500 acres east of Baxter State Park includes the east branch of the Penobscot River and a forest that is home to bear, lynx, and other wildlife. It is already open to the public for recreational opportunities such as hiking, fishing, camping, and paddling. Other activities such as hunting and snowmobiling will also be allowed on a portion of the monument. The public celebration takes place at the New England Outdoor Center beginning at 5 o'clock. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Charon.
Foot race organizers also were in the Katahdin area this week, measuring out a course that will be run as a new USATF-certified Boston qualifying marathon. Race enthusiast John Huff says the Millinocket Marathon, unlike most other races in the region, will be held in the winter.
And, well, why not? I mean, it's northern Maine, so sure, let's make it a northern Maine affair. It's going to be cold, but it's going to be fun.
Huff serves as race director for the Bay of Fundy International Marathon. He and organizer Gary Allen say the race was created to bring more activity to a region of the state that's seen hard economic times. Allen says the Millinocket Marathon waives the usual entry fees.
And the only requirement will be that runners give back to Millinocket.
That means shopping at stores and eating in local restaurants. The race was launched as a pilot project with about 50 runners last December. This year, the race will feature a full roster of 1,000 runners who will line up the morning of December 10th to complete the 26.2-mile course. Every year, Maine's adult education programs enroll nearly 100,000 students with an array of personal goals from learning to read to finding a better job. But a new federal law is raising concerns within many of those programs about the new direction that adult education could be heading. Robbie Feinberg reports.
All right, so next one. Jed lives
inside a small, humid classroom at the adult education building in Turner, Maine. Segal Isaac scribbles down notes from teacher Stacy Keniston. The class is English, and today Isaac is learning basic concepts, capitalization, punctuation. Isaac arrived in nearby Lewiston from Somalia about 3 years ago, and she barely knew the language.
I tried so hard to learn how to speak and how to read and write. Still, I'm not perfect, but I'm trying.
She started taking classes here on top of her 60-hour work week. Her eventual dream? To become a translator so she can help out her mom and others in her community who don't know English.
I have to learn English. I have to get my diploma and go to college for 2 years. And then I have to take tests. If I pass the test, I will be there.
Nearly 100,000 students like Isaac are enrolled in adult education classes across Maine, many for similar reasons. Getting a diploma, learning English, simply learning to read. But a new law has some educators worried about how that education may be changing.
The law brings business to the table and really wants those conversations, but it's more focused on the employee, not the employer.
Shirley Wright is the executive director of the Maine Adult Education Association. She's talking about WIOA, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. It was passed by Congress 2 years ago, and since then, adult education programs across the state have been trying to adapt to all of its new requirements. WIOA offers federal funds for adult education programs across the country, but it also brings new requirements, specifically in terms of collaboration. Districts need to develop plans for educators, businesses, and workforce development groups to work together to get workers back into jobs. Gail Sinise is the director of adult education for the Maine Department of Education. She says when a student used to arrive in adult education, the process was for that student to go to class and then get a diploma and then get a job. Now the mission has changed. From the first day, it's how can we find you a job, and how can we do it fast?
It's not that we don't value learning for personal development, but most people who are coming into our programs now want to learn for a job, and they need to work to support themselves and their families.
Sinise says this change has already taken hold in districts across the state, particularly since legislators passed a new statewide career pathways program in 2012. Sinise says now when hospitals need nursing assistants or call centers need workers, they partner with adult education to create specific training programs. Peter Caron, the adult education director for SAD 27 in Fort Kent, says he's already seen new programs in industries like forestry lead to higher paying jobs in high poverty regions.
So yeah, we are trying to match them with jobs that are not only going to get them off of welfare, but also get them out of poverty.
But Maine Adult Education Association Director Wright thinks the new law may go about this the wrong way, putting too much focus on quickly getting students into low-paying entry-level jobs from which they may not be able to get out.
You know, some of these people have been part of welfare and types of programs for 3 and 4 generations, and they're going into a job that's 40 hours a week and then expected if they want to move up the ladder, they've got to commit another 10 or 15 hours a week to school. Some of us do that, but it's different and it's really hard.
The other challenge is that these programs are brand new and require educators to think of adult education in a new way.
Philosophically, it rubs me a little bit because I'm into helping people improve their lives first.
Thelma Regan is the director of the Piscataquis Valley Adult Education Cooperative.
But it's just a way that I have to think. So I think slightly differently now, and that's okay. As long as we can get to people feeling like we've helped them, we've improved their lot, they feel better about everything that's going on, and it's good.
Gail Sinise with the State Department of Education thinks the new laws will eventually lead to a better system and one that's more in tune to what students want.
Change is hard, and we all have to change now because we have to align with the purposes that the federal money is being given to us.
Shirley Wright of the Maine Adult Education Association says what will make her feel better about the new plan is if the focus is really on the student, not the employer. She wants to make sure the goal isn't to simply help businesses fill jobs. She says that means companies need to pay well, be fair to workers, and perhaps contribute some of their own money to help students get trained. If that happens, she says, then she thinks adult education programs will be fulfilling their mission to help improve students' lives. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, August 25th, 2016. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Fred Bever, Robbie Feinberg, Mal Leary, Steve Missler, Jennifer Mitchell, and Patty White for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes or email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Andrew Catalina. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.